you like this episode, please subscribe, share with others, rate and review so we can continue to bring you great programming.
This is The Thing About Cars, a podcast for car enthusiasts and the people who love them.
Hello and welcome to another episode of The Thing About Cars. Very happy to be with you today. It is a beautiful sort of not quite early fall day here in Atlanta, Georgia. And we're going to check in on the Netherlands and I believe Italy in a minute. I'm not quite certain about that. But our normal crew is around. First of all, I'm one of your hosts, Mickey Desai. And our crew around the table includes Ben. How are you doing, Ben?
Hey, all right. How about you?
Good, thanks. Misty, how's things in the Netherlands?
Not damp, but I'm still peeved.
You're still peeved. And we need to talk about that for a minute because I knew you were channeling some serious rage there for a second. Don, how's it going?
Excellent. Hi, everybody.
And our special guest for the day is Paolo. Paolo is a KTM ambassador and has some other claims to fame, which we're going to discuss here in a short minute. But how are you, Paolo?
I'm pretty good by myself, Deb. Thank you.
Excellent. I'm glad you could join us today. First of all, before I do our grand trivia auto question, Misty, why are you so angry?
Well, you know, it's usually considered bad form to run your car up under somebody else's car, especially in Formula One. And then it's considered especially bad form when someone else is trying to get out of their car and you hit the grass and they hit the gas. I'm just furious at today's Formula One. Lewis Hamilton deserves a penalty and a race ban. And I probably would really, really, really like to beat him with a rutabaga.
So is he going to get a penalty? Does that sort of thing happen?
Yeah, they haven't called it yet. They just came out of the steward's office about 10 minutes ago. So I'm kind of keeping a watch on some commentary to see it. But I have a feeling in the pit of my heart that it's going to be declared a racing incident. So it was dirty play.
Dirty play. That's not cool. And I missed it. We'll have to catch it on the highlights reel later. Well, I hope your rage subsides, Misty, and I've got a trivia question to distract everybody with. The trivia grand trivia auto question for today. The question is, why do some off-roaders prefer to use a winch spooled with tow rope instead of steel cable, right? So off-roading vehicles like Jeeps, I guess, would be the most obvious one, but any off-roading vehicle, they often have a winch on the front end of the car so they can pull themselves out of sticky situations, you know, pits or mud pits or whatever. Why do some people prefer to have their winch spooled with tow rope instead of steel cable? And our multiple choice answers are A, a taut tow rope is less likely than a steel cable to flail about and cause damage if it were ever to snap. B, tow rope costs less than steel cable. C, synthetic tow rope is stronger than steel cable. Or D, all of the above. Miss, do you need me to read those again?
No, I got it.
You got it? Everybody good?
Yeah.
Okay. So we'll answer that question at the end of the show. And now let's speak with our special guest, Paolo. Paolo, you're in Italy, correct?
Yes, I am. I'm in Milan.
Milan. Oh, my God.
So jealous.
Yes.
jealous. Okay.
And you say you're a KTM ambassador. How does this come to be? What does that mean exactly?
It means that you're pretty much representing a segment of the production line of the brand. So I'm representing the adventure models segment, which are kind of bikes that are usually taller for traveling.
Yeah. And this is a formal relationship you have with KTM.
It's kind of formal. It's more like I'm an independent, whatever guy. And they give me a motorcycle to try and ride around. So,
right. Yeah. Right. So I don't know if the rest of my crew here knows exactly why we originally connected. We originally met on Reddit, I believe. Yes. And your claim to fame on Reddit is that you've done road trips all over the globe. Isn't that right?
Yes. That's why I got contacted by KTM too.
Okay. Yeah. That's very cool. So have you literally ridden a motorcycle all over the world?
Yeah, up to COVID. Yeah. Yes. Then I had to stop for a little bit. But yeah, up to 2020, I started riding in 2015. So I went around pretty much the globe for 5-6 years.
Wow.
And did you like go, if you jump continents, did you just get on a ship and take your bike and go to Australia and New Zealand? And
yeah, there's a different kind of transportation you can choose from, which the most common is the ship, like a cargo ship. Sometimes you just hop on like a fisherman boat, and for a longer haul, people choose airplanes too, air freight.
Amazing. I know Ben's going to have some questions perhaps related to your bike and some of the things you've seen, but Misty, you guys jump in on this because I do have some other questions, but you should go first.
Oh, I'm just wondering if he ever took a ferry from Brindisi to Alexandria.
Not to Alexandria, but from Brindisi, I went to Greece. I'm actually going tomorrow from not far from there, like from Ancona to Patras, which is in Greece.
You know, you can swing by and pick me up. I'm just outside of Amsterdam.
All right. Sure.
I'm an experienced bike passenger. You know, I have my steel butt certification.
I don't mind appealing passenger. Don't worry.
You know, I can. My Italian is not the best. You know, but I can't food, beer, and bathroom, which is pretty much my Spanish and my German
basics.
And I refuse to speak French. So
I'm pretty sure that that's all you need in Italy anyway.
The toilette is everywhere. So
yeah, well, we vacationed, just south of Venice, in, oh gosh, what was it? I forget now, but for like 7 or 8 years. So love the Italian people, love the Italian food, love the, one of my favorite memories is stopping at a family owned hotel. And my husband, who was like 2.5 meters, okay, big guy, he didn't eat all of his vegetables. And the hostess, which was also like the mom and the, you know, the matriarch, like, just, you need to eat your vegetables. You need to eat your vegetables. You know, she was like, you know, maybe, you know, 1.60 meters tops. And here she is telling my husband, you know, you have to eat your vegetables. So
if you're in Milan, and I'm going to cut you off, sorry, Misty, because no now worries. I'm like, I'm mapped out. Are you heading over to Venice and then you're going to take a boat down to Patras?
Yes, it's a ferry. It's a big ferry.
It is a big ferry. I've done it. It's a big ferry. And then what are you going to do? Drive all over Greece?
Well, at the moment, there's an event called KTM Adventure Rally, which involves almost 200 bikes, all KTMs. And we're going to spend like a week riding around like a Peloponnese, so around Patras.
Oh, very nice.
Excellent. Well, I'm Greek and my grandfather's from the island of Chios. So that's why I'm fascinated. I should connect you up with my cousin Michael in Athens, who is a bartender. Oh. And yeah, he's quite.
It's always good to have a bartender for a friend. Yeah.
It is. Well, he's my cousin. So.
And Don just derails the whole event with one bartender.
yeah, so that sounds wonderful. Beautiful time of year to be there.
Yes, it's not so hot anymore.
No, it's yeah. And the Mediterranean is going to be gorgeous. Fantastic. I'm jealous.
What's on your mind, Ben?
Not much, really.
I'm actually jealous of that too. But I was not familiar with KTM bikes. This is a new thing to me because, as you know, I'm not a bike rider, and I don't know much about the world of motorbikes overall. But Paolo, what can you tell us about KTM? Why don't we see more of those here in America? Or are they here? Are they in the US and I'm simply missing them?
Yes. KTM is mostly known for their dirt bikes. So you guys have plenty of those and they keep winning everything, like the AMA, Supercross, all you guys, all the competitions. You have amazing riders as well. Like some of the best riders are from the US. So yes, but they do also market to regular people. So they started to make these travel bikes. They're very popular at the moment.
I see.
Yeah, they are in the United States and you can usually spot them by they're almost always black and orange.
Yes.
Now that's their colors, and they have very, very angular styling that some people like and some people don't. And the current models that have a little bit of street orientation have kind of a weird-looking headlight, very hard to describe.
Yeah. Like an alien.
They're here. They're not very common, but they are here. And among people who do, you know, have them, they like them very much.
So KTM here is in the States, and I just don't know it because I don't frequent the extreme sports segment that much. Is that that's what it sounds like?
Yes. That's more like a dirt bike riding, really.
Right. And now I'm looking at the website and I'm completely entranced. This is amazing. Look at these bikes. They're beautiful.
They're very fancy. Yes.
Yeah.
They're not cheap. They're definitely in the not cheap kind of realm. You know, mm-hmm. It's like Ducati, BMW, KTM are not the most affordable motorcycles.
Sure. Why did you choose a KTM and which model are you riding?
I used to ride this big 1200 cc bike, and that's the one that I rode around the world for almost 130,000 miles. So, and I didn't have a single mechanical problem, so that was like something really mind-blowing for everybody, especially for me. But people really got passionate about this thing that, you know, bike had no problem for 6 years. So then I got contacted by KTM and so on and so forth. But yeah, now I'm riding like a smaller one, like a 890 cc, which is more maneuverable and easier for me to ride, less weight.
Yeah, right, that makes sense. What have you seen on your road trips? Anything in particular stand out to you? Are you able to really soak up the culture of places where you go? What do you want to do again, and what would you choose to avoid?
I started from Australia because I live in Australia. So I'm Italian, but I moved to Australia in 2010. So I started from there, and I spent like a whole year going around the island, I will say.
Yeah, I could take that long.
Yeah, it's a massive one. It's a really, really big one. And then I shipped the bike to South America. So I took took me 2 years, a year and a half to go all around South America. Then I went to North America, took me another year and a half. And then I shipped the bike to Europe and another 6 months riding around Europe. So I take my time in exploring. I don't really do like a month expeditions. So I really get the time to enjoy a bit of the culture as well, other than the sceneries and the riding, obviously.
Yep.
So I do speak a bit of Spanish. So Latin America was a very nice place to explore. And my English is okay so far.
I can get by.
And I haven't really explored much of the Asian and the African continent so far. I've been in Asia before and traveling without a motorcycle. But I definitely miss like Russia and those countries, like the stands, Kazakhstan, all the Iran. There's so many beautiful countries to explore. And Africa, I have no clue. There's nothing I've seen in Africa. So that's a big big chunk of my exploration that is still missing.
Well, if you ever get to India, I've got a couple of old colleagues that are also motorcycle guys, and they've shown some pictures, and I was like, that's not a road. That's,
no.
I mean, it was like this big, and it was just like a sheer drop off. And one of the guys, he said, when I got back home, he was like, oh my God, I'm alive. Yes, I'm alive.
India, I would never choose to ride in India if I knew how to. I don't even want to drive in India on something that has four wheels. It is just an exercise in madness. And
You know, I mean, I've driven over a lot of Europe. You know, Germany's like 2 hours from my house, Belgium, Luxembourg, France, Spain. Right. I just got back from Spain last weekend. There are two places in this world I will never drive a car. That is Paris and India. You know, and they both have the same philosophy about, you know, street markings. They're just really there for decoration.
I would never drive in Paris either.
Jesus Christ, no. God, no.
Matter of fact, I've driven in Rome, and I don't know that I would ever drive in Rome again unless I had a bike. That's crazy. Oh my goodness.
Oh, it is. Yeah. I mean, I've been to Rome as well, and you know, I was just using public transportation, you know, but I was like, Okay, I'm on public transportation. Excuse me while I pull my kidneys from around my ears, you know, because the roads were less than optimal. You know, absolutely lovely city, though.
You guys have heard me talk about India. There's only two rules to traffic in India, and they are stay as far to the left as possible and don't have any accidents. And yeah. every accident I ever saw, they said that traffic court was swift and merciless. And the person who won the fist fight after your accident is the person who was correct.
Yeah, no, right. I was in India a few years ago. I had a team, a first line customer service team there. I was traveling back from Cyber City, which is a huge office park there, to my hotel. And the hotel had this small road, and I was in my taxi. Like it's like 10 o'clock at night, and all of a sudden traffic just stops.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm like, what? I said, it's 10 o'clock at night. And the taxi driver's like, you know, just a moment, ma'am. Let me get out and check. And gets out, locks all the doors, comes back. He says, it'll be just a moment. There's two taxi drivers having a fist fight.
It's crazy.
Okay.
It's absolute nuts. And Top Gear did a segment that took them through India with the nightmares of what it meant to be traveling on one of their interstates. And I don't know if you guys saw it. I don't know if Paulo saw it, but that was an accurate representation. People are just lucky that it's such a chaotic mess. Completely terrible. Mm. But
although yeah. I have to say, I have deep respect for Italian people on the little scooters. They have zero fear. They're just like, oh, it's a freight truck. I'll play chicken with that. No problem. I've seen that many times. You know, we've driven through.
Yeah, I'll let you guys know because apparently I'm going to India.
Oh, so. Well, I wish you luck. We'll all say a silent prayer for you.
Right. Yeah. So, Paulo, who sets up your itinerary? Is that something that you work with KTM on?
I set up my own itineraries, but I discuss with them in case there's one of my itineraries that interests them. So. In this case, there's a match in our interest because I want to see India, and they build part of their manufacturer is in India. So, it's, yes, there's a mutual interest to go there at the moment.
So. Go, yeah, check out the plant.
Yeah, it's a lovely country.
Yeah, it's a beautiful country, but as you guys mentioned, the driving is a bit intense. There's all the people there. But traveling, I realized that the standards of roads and driving that we have in Europe and generally like in North America are different from what the rest of the world has. So all the people don't have a driver license, then drive and or don't have insurance and drive. And, you know, we're used to have this as kind of default things that people should have. But a lot of countries in the world don't. People just get whatever they have or whatever they can get and take up the road. So,
what are some of the more memorable things you've seen on the road?
I always wanted to see South America because I've seen it's one of the highlights for motor traveling, I will say. Mm-hmm. But there's also some beautiful spots that are like famous for travelers, as like Patagonia or. You know, the Andes in general, Brazil, you know, there's so much to see. Also, you know, Mexico was a pretty interesting place to explore. And then places like probably more familiar to you guys are like Alaska and also the Midwest. You know, I never really explored the Midwest. It was a really interesting experience for me to go across the United States and see what was in the middle. You know, people usually end up in the
corn,
the big cities, and you know, get the experience only of the big cities, but actually the vast majority of the country is what's in the middle. So
that's right. That's exactly right.
It's really, really interesting and beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Do you prefer like flatlands or mountains?
Well, flatlands might have different vibes. Sometimes like, desert are actually pretty beautiful. I vividly remember Nevada, for instance, which is pretty much a high desert. There's nothing else. There's nothing in Nevada hundreds of miles, and still really beautiful to me. I mean, it's a very high desert and it's very flat, but it's very high too. So it's quite interesting. And Australia is pretty much flat everywhere. And but it gives you another vibe. It allows you to almost meditate while you ride, because you're not really focused on anything, because the road is straight and there's nothing happening. So you kind of zone out a bit.
You can be on autopilot. Yeah.
Yes. And it gives you another perspective of traveling. You know, when you're really engaged all the time, you can't really have, you don't have time to think or to just stop for a second. But on these open roads, you have more chances to just relax.
Yep. I very much want to go to the Pacific Rim and try to drive around some of those countries, although it's not really, they're not really known for their open roads and driving experiences. But I kind of want to visit some African countries, because Africa, I'm told, has some of the same topography. It's flat, it's meditative, it's, you know, it's a different world. So what would you choose to avoid if you had to do this again? Are there things you saw that were somewhat disappointing?
Not really disappointing. You know, you can't really choose what you encounter. And I tend to not to research about the country I'm going to visit. Because usually when you read about a country, it's somebody else's opinion. So I want to maintain my you know, judgment completely neutral and get what I, you know, receive what I get from the country based on, you know, pure, you know, chance, you know, way. Yeah. It could be timing or the season or people you meet or just the vibe that you have at the moment. So I don't really have expectations in this sense. So I don't really try to avoid anything. What I try to maybe plan in advance is in terms of like the season. So if it's really cold on a motorcycle, is a problem. So right. If it's snowing, yeah. There's ice, it might be dangerous.
I was wondering about that. That's really amazing that you're open-minded before you go to experience the culture, but there's got to be some things you've got to plan for the bike.
You usually have to plan like tires, like mm-hmm. tire changes, or if you need spare parts, you need to plan a bit ahead, because you can't really find mm-hmm. anything you need all the time. So you buy online and you get it delivered somewhere to a dealer. You contact the dealer beforehand and stuff like this. And tires, you know, for tire changes and stuff, which happens very frequently on a motorcycle. On a car, maybe, you know, it takes like, I don't know, 30,000 miles to change a tire. On a bike, it's like 10,000. You're cooked. Yes.
I did not know that. Yeah.
Especially the rear tire, which has most of the weight.
Yeah. That makes sense. All this time, I thought rubber was simply rubber.
That's really interesting. And then what about petrol? Do you have any difficulty when you're in some culture or some countries that, you know, the gas is not going to really work for that particular performance bike?
Yes, exactly. Like, this is a kind of a, KTM makes really performance oriented bikes. So they technically they require a very high octane gasoline, and a lot of countries don't have that. And one particular country was Bolivia, which didn't have any motorcycle size more than 125, or like they all like small Chinese or Indian made motorcycle, and the gasoline and people a gas station weren't allowed to sell you fuel if you had a foreign plate. So it was a complicated matter to
Where did you get your gas?
So I had to buy like a canister, like a 10 liter canister, like a 5 gallon canister, and walk, like park the bike literally like 50 meters from the gasoline, from the gas station, and walk to the gas station and have the, you know, the canister filled up, and then walk back to the bike and repeat the procedure for two, three times, because I couldn't carry like a huge canister, you know, like a 20 liter or like 10 gallons kind of thing. It was too big. So I had to carry that all over Bolivia. So that was an interesting experience.
And you knew that before you went there?
No, I didn't know.
No, you didn't.
Clearly, I didn't know. No, that was
That's a scary surprise.
Well, remember, Don, he doesn't read what other people have to say.
I was thinking technically.
I should have.
Yeah, I was going to say that's a technical thing. That's not a cultural thing.
Yeah, right. I would have never imagined that people will not sell you fuel.
Yeah.
That's a weird one, you know? Like it's,
that is a weird one.
Yes. Yeah, only certain fuel station were allowed to sell to foreigners, like maybe N in the old country.
We're running out of time, Paolo, so I'm going to go ahead and ask you the questions we ask for all of our guests. And please stick around for the rest of the show. We're going to talk about gasoline and maybe, if God only knows, where Misty will take us with her rambling. So you ready for these questions?
Yes.
Number one, what is your dream car? In this case, what's your dream bike?
Oh, my dream bike. I thought about cars. All right.
Cars too, either one. Which right. ones? Yeah, let's do both.
I like electric cars. Believe it or not, I like electric cars. So it will be like a very fancy, fast electric car. That right. I don't care about the brand.
Yeah. I think Porsche. Like
Porsche. They have the Cayman, whatever is the electric.
Have you seen the Lotus Evija?
Oh no, but I've seen like a BMW, which is really aggressive and electric, I believe.
Anyway. The Evija is completely electric, and it is extremely high performance. It's selling for something like $2 million. They're only making 130 of them, and I think they're all spoken for already.
Yeah,
yeah, it's just slightly outside of my budget, but it's okay.
And it looks like something out of sci-fi.
That BMW electric one, if it's the i8, I believe it's called.
Yes.
We have a friend here of the thing about cars who used to be a BMW mechanic, and he does not like that car.
No.
He says some very bad things about it. It's very difficult to get into and get out of. They're known for having small reserve gas tank leaks and things like that. It's just, it's not completely electric. I think there's a backup generator in it or something, but he says in his words, Ronnie refers to it as a turd. And,
there you go.
Yeah. Well,
don't forget, there's that, Baltasar Revolt out of Spain. It's 770 kilograms, 500 brake horsepower sports wow. car.
Really? No kidding.
We've talked about this. This was in one of my news sections.
It?
It's called a Baltasar Revolt.
Huh. I'm sorry, Misty. I've forgotten this.
It's been a few months ago, isn't it?
Yeah.
Fully electric sports car.
Okay.
Very pretty.
So in question number two, Paolo, and we've sort of touched on this, where's your next road trip going to be, presumably once COVID is under some control?
It's probably going to be India or going back to Australia and do another trip there. Australia, New Zealand.
Yeah, got it. Number three, what's the most fascinating thing you've seen while on the road or maybe in someone's garage?
Ooh, I've seen a guy in LA owning like a Dodge Charger and a Camaro. They were like, just my God, in condition. It felt like I was in a movie. It was unbelievable stuff. Yes.
Yep. Very cool. And our random question for you is always something silly and frivolous that just comes from a random list of questions. If you were to host a dinner party and could invite one famous person, either living or dead, who would you invite?
Gandhi.
Gandhi, no kidding.
Yes.
Why Gandhi?
I think is I don't know. He had a way of understanding the world that I don't know. I think we all need. His wiseness is something that I aspire to. Yes, he has a very very unique way of seeing the world, and very hard to see in that like that. You know, I think I just recently read on Reddit that he wrote a letter to Hitler, you know, just like, it was the most amazing letter. He was sympathetic to even Hitler, you know, at those times. So it was a very interesting person. If I could, I would definitely like to meet him.
Okay. Thank you. Good answers. Thank you, Paolo. Thank you for being our guest today. Please do stick around for the rest of the show. We're going to transition into a segment that a friend wrote a note to us. He says, can you spend some time talking about gasoline? So he has a bunch of questions here that we should not dwell on too much. We're going to give ourselves 10 segments for this one. 10 minutes for this one. And so I'm just going to rifle through these. How is gas made? Does anyone want to take that?
Well, it's a refining process.
Right.
Essentially, crude oil gets put into a refinery tower, which I'm going to really oversimplify here, especially since I didn't research this ahead of time. But basically, the way a refining tower works is you apply heat to it, and then all the different densities of stuff get trapped at different layers in the tower.
That's right. It's basically a gigantic distilling operation. Basically, yeah. you're taking stuff off at certain temperatures and at certain layers, and one of those layers is gasoline.
Yep.
So the next question is, what's the difference between standard gas and diesel? Paolo, do you know this one?
The way they burn, I think, is difference in the way they burn.
I think that's right, but I don't know if there's a more technical definition. Ben?
They are different substances. Diesel comes from lower down on the refining tower.
Yeah.
It's a heavier, denser, item. For example, you could walk up to a big trailer, tank trailer full of diesel. You could throw a lit match in there and you wouldn't be in any danger. It's got, much higher thermal density, so it doesn't ignite as easily.
Right.
It's really more of an oil. In fact, it's basically the same thing as kerosene.
Right. What are octane ratings for, and when should we pay attention to octane ratings? Octane ratings, there's a huge answer that we could give that's related to organic chemistry and the number of hydrogen bonds that are in the substance, but I don't think we should do that.
To make it very, very simple, that OCT prefix means there's eight of something.
You're right.
It's basically eight segments in a polymer. And the eight segment gasoline molecule is the ideal density for burning in our engines. So the higher the octane rating, the higher percentage of those perfect, eight length chains. The remainder is going to be sevens or nines or sixes or whatever.
Right.
But the eight is the ideal. And why that's important has to do usually with the compression of the engine.
Yeah.
The higher the compression, the more resistance to pre-ignition you need.
So the higher octane is required for good ignition.
Yeah. And one of the in the old days before engines were terribly complicated, if you didn't know what the manufacturer recommended, what you would do is start with the lowest grade and work your way up. And the point where you had the least amount of knocking without spending an unnecessarily or without spending your money on an unnecessarily high grade was your ideal.
Right.
Because once you're past the knocking, using an even higher grade is just a waste of money.
Right.
Now, with today's engines, it's a little more complicated because you have a lot of injection systems, and especially now with the gas direct injection, a lot of those are very finicky about what goes through them. You don't want to use too low grade of fuel because a lot of times the lower grade ones don't have as good detergent packages and things like that. There are a lot of additives that and cleanliness standards and things like that. Yeah. So as long as you use, in the United States, at least, if you use something that's top tier rated, you're not going to foul up anything.
Which leads right into the next question, which is, are there certain brands of gasoline that are better than others? If so, why? And I think the answer is yes, certain brands are better than others, but it's all related to the detergent packages. And from a legal perspective, will the company stand behind any damage done to your engine if they should happen to push a bad load of petrol, bad load of gasoline?
I would think they would if you could legally prove it.
Yeah. Well, I know people like the QT company here, they stand behind their gas. My mechanic has said he has seen QT pay for the work to some of his clients' cars.
Yeah. So. Though the top tier thing is a voluntary standard that, companies aspire to or, apply to or whatever. It has to do with, the quality of the additives and the cleanliness, how many micrograms of deposits their fuels will leave on injectors and valves and things.
Right.
That said, the dirty little secret that the industry doesn't want most of us to know is that gasoline is a fungible commodity. The way it works is all the different companies in the business are putting their product into the same pipelines. The big regional distribution pipelines, and where they become differentiated as their different brands is toward the other end of the process. You see those big places where, all the trucks fill up to take it to the stations. It's when it goes into the trucks that the additive packages are added.
Right.
That it's at the point where you're filling the trucks that it becomes QT or Exxon or BP or right. whatever.
Right, right.
Yeah, I was wondering about that. That's the interesting part. So that they can track it better and they can control the end product better.
Yeah, not only that, but every company can't have its own big giant pipeline distribution network. Mm. That's just not practical.
And I'm not sure that our friend, my friend Joe, is the one who sent in this series of questions. I'm going to try to directly answer the question by saying that there are brands of gas that I prefer over others. But most everyone take a look at the chart and figure out who's on that volunteer top tier designation, right? And if you're buying one of the top tier gases, you should be fine.
Yeah, you should be.
Yeah.
They all meet, certain standards. Even the raw stuff that goes into the pipeline at the refinery end still has to meet a minimum set of, standards.
Right.
I want to say it's American Petroleum Institute that sets that, but don't quote me. I could be wrong.
Yeah. Well.
But it's a funny thing. How it works with your car can be very subjective. I know back in the 80s and 90s when I was driving these little early 80s Hondas that I had, they seemed to prefer the Shell product as far as how they ran, but they were less computerized cars than we have today. And nowadays, honestly, every fuel seems to run about the same in my car.
What kind of gas did the earliest models of car run on? And originally, some of them did natural gas in the very, very beginning, if I'm not mistaken. But otherwise, I think gasoline has always simply been gasoline.
Yeah, I mean, it's gotten better over the years.
Yeah.
It's become, more potent and more refined and just, better all around. But I mean, when automobiles began, it did exist as a substance, but it didn't have very many uses. In fact, it was often a waste product that was dumped that
Wow.
came from the refining process. Yeah, because no one had come up with a good use for it yet.
Right, right. All right. Where was the first gas station built and when? And there's large and wide-ranging debate on this one, so I'm not sure we can actually verify it. But I have a date in mind. Yeah. Does anyone want to have a date on this? Paulo, do you think it was in the U.S. or was it someplace else?
I have to say, first car. Maybe in the U.K., I would say. Maybe.
Could be. My original thought was somewhere in Germany because of what eventually became Mercedes. Those guys were the first people to build cars in Europe, I believe.
Definitely not in Italy.
Right, definitely not in
no.
Italy.
No, we're good with pasta and stuff like that, but not leave us
and
out.
Limoncello.
Yeah, limoncello for sure.
Yes.
We're the first to make limoncello. That's right.
Oh my goodness. Guys, playing into all the stereotypes here.
You can't run your car on it, though.
Who needs
it? No. Why couldn't you? It's
Look,
ethanol.
You hand me a bottle of good limoncello and we're not going anywhere. We're just going to stay put.
Yeah, see, that's yeah. the problem.
That's true.
That's right. So here I'm looking at something that's from safecrack.com. Safecrack.com says the first dedicated gas station was built in St. Louis, Missouri at 420 South Teresa Avenue in the year 1905. But it wasn't apparently a branded gas station. It didn't belong to an actual company. And this is, way before the evolution of anything related to being a gas pump. It says here that the first service station was installed by the Standard Oil Company of California, otherwise now known as Chevron. And that was put in Seattle, Washington, at what is now Pier 32.
Yeah. I was thinking Standard Oil would have been the first branded gas. There's no doubt.
That was the year 1907.
Mm-hmm. Well, I actually have a question because you mentioned ethanol. There's the big push now in Europe where we have E5 and E10, which is 5% or 10% ethanol. Basically they're saying, if your car was built, 2000 forward, there's not a problem. Is that movement starting in the US? Is it catching on? Because, they're saying it's, reducing
Europe is catching up to the United States in this regard. We've had it here for years and years and years and years. And it's funny you mentioned that because in my Lotus forums, all the guys in England are having big discussions and debates about it. And then us Americans, after it cools down, say, don't worry about it. We've had it for ages. You'll be fine. You know,
yeah. We've had at least 5%. I don't know that it's gone more higher than 5.
Oh yeah. Well, yeah. Every pump almost everywhere in the United States, as far back as I can recall.
Mm-hmm.
Well, not as far back as I can recall. I'm not that young, but I mean, they all say, you know, contains up to 10%, which means you could be getting any degree between 0 and 10.
Well, in Denver, when I was in Denver doing my grad work, every winter they would pump up the ethanol content of the gas, and it would make everybody angry because they were trying to do something like with it but related to emissions, apparently.
Well, there is summer grade and winter grade. We change over it's changing over now. I mean, if by the end of September, beginning of October, the grade of gas should change here.
And that was true even before ethanol came on the mm-hmm. scene. The whole thing with ethanol is the theory is that it oxygenates the fuel more, and so it's supposed to be cleaner burning or something. But I probably don't have to get too far into this. Most of us have probably heard this. The actual value of this is very debatable, you know, given the carbon footprint of producing it. That and in the, and I don't know about the rest of the world, but here in the United States, the ethanol supply for automotive fuels has been essentially a huge boondoggle. The corn lobby is laughing all the way to the bank.
Do they make it out of sorghum as well?
Not much here, no. In the U.S., it's all from corn.
Well, in the EU, they're doing it from wheat, corn, barley, rye, sugar beets.
Yeah.
You know, so we're doing it, you know, but you know, I've been out of the U.S. for 17 years now. So, you know, and I don't remember there being ethanol.
Oh, yes. It's been around that long. As Ben said, as long as I've been driving, we've had it.
Yep. Yeah. You know, okay. I've got an environmental science degree. I think of myself as a tree hugger. And even from that standpoint, I don't like ethanol.
Right. All right.
In terms of your vehicle will run with whatever things you put in. I put any kind of fuel in my motorcycle. And yeah, sometimes we have problems, but the engine wasn't substantially damaged by the quality of fuel that I put in. So
right. Yeah,
I'm sure if it's, it matters or not, or was it just a case, but I fueled up from Coca-Cola bottles for 4 or 5 months straight. So
you're probably good all the way up to E15. Above that, an engine really has to be designed to accept high amounts of ethanol to run right.
I doubt it was higher than 80 octane, and I don't know how much the ethanol, but
So the oldest existing gas station, it still exists and it still operates as a gas station. Anyone want to take a guess on where in the world that is? It was built in the in the year 1909.
Oh, goodness.
I stick with Britain.
The oldest existing gas station in the United States anyway. So let me qualify that. It's in the United States. It exists in a city called Altoona, Pennsylvania.
Oh, in Altoona. Oh, how cute.
Yeah. and it's still there. And I'm looking at a picture of it right now. It could very well be the same building with a modern a canopy up in front where the gas pumps are underneath. But I imagine the first iteration of this building did not have anything that resembled a gas pump in 1909. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, that's fun.
All right. Anyway, good stuff. Good questions. Thank you, Joe, for the questions. And let's shift to the end of the show here. We're going to answer our grand trivia auto question and call it a day. The question was, why do some off-roaders prefer to use a winch spooled with tow rope rather than a steel cable? And our choices are, from before, D, all of the above, C, synthetic tow rope is stronger than a steel cable, B, tow rope costs less than steel cable, or is a taut tow rope less likely than a steel cable to flail around and cause damage if it were to snap? Paolo, you want to take our first guess?
Because the first you said before, or the last one you just say. So in case it snaps, is also more flexible. I think it stretches more. So I stay with the less damages.
Less damage. Got it. Don, what's your guess?
I'm saying all the above. Because it makes sense that, you know, I do think the synthetic, when you think about steel, it's going to be subjective to also to the weather conditions. So if it's super cold, the steel is going to be more difficult than a synthetic rope. And it's cheaper. So yeah, I think that's why it's going to be more popular. So I'm going to say all of the above.
What do you think, Ben?
Probably all the above, even though one or two of the reasons don't really seem to make that much sense to me.
Okay. And Misty?
In the all of the above category.
Wow. So three of you guys are saying all of the above. And you know what? The answer is a taut tow rope is less likely to snap than a steel cable and flail about to cause damage. So Paolo got it correct.
Good for you, Paolo.
and that's the one that I liked the most.
Yeah.
Yeah. That, you know, if there hadn't been an all of the above, that would right. have been my answer.
Right. So thank you, as always, to our trivia guru, our trivia czar, Tim Rogers. Tim is really good at coming up with excellent questions for us, and we appreciate his help. Paolo, once again, thank you for being our guest today. Thank you for taking the time to join us for this episode. Yeah. And if you're ever around or ever want to do an episode, please just let us know where we'd love to have you back.
After India, for sure.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Let's definitely talk after you do India, wow. for sure. In the meantime, thanks to all of our listeners and our families and friends of Thing About Cars family people. As you know, I'm stumbling over my words right now, but we're glad you're part of the Thing About Cars family. And I'm going to go have some more limoncello and just chill out for the rest of the day. In the meantime, I hope you guys are all staying safe out there. We'll see you with another episode in about a week. Take care, everybody.
Bye.
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 Listening. This has been The Thing About Cars. We'll see you on the road.